TalkZone.com!
Now, TalkZone presents Our Global Hope, World-Changing Leadership Talk, featuring Dr. Henrik Mann, discussing higher standard leadership through a broad scope of issues in the worlds of business, politics, nonprofits, international development, environment, media, and religion. Here's your host for Our Global Hope, Dr. Henrik Mann.
Hello, listeners of Our Global Hope. It's time for more world-changing leadership talk on this December the 18th, our pre-Christmas show. We're here to explore our world through the lens of leadership, to give people a voice on what good leadership looks like from their local reality, and to explore the implications of a new triple-line bottom focus definition of success, one focused on advancing the dignity of people, growing profit, and protecting the welfare of the planet. I'm Dr. Henrik Mann, president of Gencom International, a global management consultancy and brokerage, and you can learn more about our show by looking us up on the international web at www.ourglobalhope.com. Our call-in number today is 1-888-463-6748. That's 1-888-463-6748, which is also the letters Go For It, and we hope you will. Last week on Our Global Hope, we discussed the profound implications of new physics for effective leadership influence in corporate and community settings in the 21st century. This week, we take a look at matters of theory and practice when it comes to doing well and doing good. And it's my pleasure always to have as my guest and my part-time host, Dr. Charlie Self, who is an author, professor, speaker, and consultant, who's living and working right now out of Springfield, Missouri. Welcome, Charlie.
It is a delight to be with you and to be speaking to our global audience about global hope. And you used a great phrase, Henrik, of referring to doing well and doing good. You know, when I had a funny thought here as we were talking together that as I was growing up, my parents constantly corrected my grammar to make sure I used good and well properly. And what we really want to communicate today is that we can see business excellence, including profit, including development, including empowerment of employees and leaders, and we can also see the ability to be transformational and positive toward the social structures that those businesses are working in. We can do good and do well at the same time.
You know, Charlie, I think that this show embodies some of the deepest values, most precious commitments that you and I have as men, as business leaders, as spiritual men, as men who want to be there in the context of community for others and who want to make a difference in the world. I just can't think of a more wonderful opportunity than to be on a talk show with you to discuss in an intelligent and thoughtful manner issues that make a difference in people's lives, focusing on topics that ennoble and that emphasize the dignity of human beings.
I agree with you, and I would say that one of the things we're doing, and I'm looking forward to the different topics we're going to look at today, but one of the things we're doing, and I want to urge our listeners to feel free to both call in today and also to check our archives out at ourglobalhope.com. One of the things we're doing, Henrik, is helping people get rid of the fallacy of either or, the fallacy that either I'm an ethical person or I'm a good entrepreneur, or either I'm a family man or I'm successful in business, or either we make profits or we give to charity, that kind of thing, or either we have deep spiritual values or we're practical. Those are all false distinctions, and as we enjoy our conversation today, I think we can do a good job of kind of getting rid of those myths and getting rid of those ways of thinking that keep us from that holistic vision that you shared at the beginning.
Well, Charlie, I'm aware that through all the different shows we've done so far that I've never really highlighted your background or given you a chance to share, and I think maybe it's time for us to come out from behind the curtain a little bit and share with our audience a little bit more about who we are. So to get things started today, I realize that not many of our listeners have ever heard your personal story, and I'm wondering if you can share maybe your professional story and give our listeners a little deeper sense of who you are and what you're all about.
Well, I think maybe the best way is to sort of paint a little picture of the kind of fields I've had the privilege of serving. I am a minister. I am a professor, and as a minister, I've served as a pastor in churches. I've served in context of education as well as social development and community service. So I am an ordained minister. I'm also a professor, and I've taught in four different disciplines at the undergraduate and graduate level in history, in religion, in philosophy, and in various scriptural contexts. So I've had the privilege of teaching in different parts of our nation and different parts of the world. I've also had the privilege, I'm not as much, but enough to really get a sense of how hard people work every day. I've had the privilege of being a business consultant and working in business as well. I won't claim to special expertise there, but I've had the honor of working with consultation firms to make sure their principles are ethical and holistic. And then a fourth area is I'm also an author and a speaker on subjects that are both directly religious, but also touch on economic, political, and ethical issues. So I've had just the honor these past 30 years as an adult professional to be able to integrate those things, because all that I shared, I've usually done together in different proportions. And right now, currently, I'm a full-time professor teaching in the areas of history, leadership, areas of social transformation, and I teach at a seminary to people who are professionals, who will be pastoring churches, who will be leading a variety of missions around the world. But I also engage on the in communication like this on the radio on various stations. I'm writing books about the Holocaust at present, as well as about the ethics of the future. So it's a I find myself those four areas working together, and I'm always asking the question of how what I'm doing touches my deepest values, and at the same time, I always want to be an advocate for others who may have different perspectives to have the same freedom and liberty to find their way in not only our global hope, but our global conversation.
I appreciate you sharing that with our listeners, and that leads us into the first segment's question, which is, what is labor and how does it relate to theory? How does it relate theory to practice? And Charlie, I can't help but go back to one of the people who has influenced humanity's thinking about labor, Karl Marx. And whether we agree with him or not, he's certainly somebody who has thought a lot about what labor is. And he writes this. He says, labor is above all a process between man and nature, a process in which man, through his own action, mediates, regulates, and controls his mere material exchange with nature. He confronts the substance of nature itself as a natural power. He sets in motion the natural forces belonging to his corporeal being, that is, his arms and legs, head and hand, in order to appropriate nature in a form usable for his own life. And that definition mainly focuses on how we as human beings have to confront nature. We're dependent upon it, and we are natural human beings who have to use our bodies, our hands, our heads, our hearts to meet our needs as we carve existence out of the economy that we create. And I'm just wondering what you think about how labor relates theory to practice, and that there really doesn't need to be such a great dichotomy between theory and practice, and that people shouldn't be afraid to think.
Well, boy, you laid out something tremendous here, Henrik, and some of our listeners will be a little afraid at the fact that you quoted Karl Marx. In quoting Karl Marx's observations of what people do with their brains, do with their hands, do with their feet, we're in no way endorsing the practices that have been done in his name any more than being an adherent of a particular religion endorses some of the extremists. But what Marx gets at there, and other theorists about labor, is that it is humankind's unique position on earth to not only be part of nature, but to shape it, to utilize it. And notice how I'm using terms like shape and utilize, not rape, pillage, or exploit it. And part of the great challenge of history and the great challenge today is how we can create a sustainable future and make sure that people's labor is amply rewarded, make sure people's labor has meaning, but make sure that our current labor doesn't make things difficult for generations ahead of us. So, interesting, the historical problem with Marxism is not its critique of selfishness or materialism or the gap between rich and poor. Few people would argue with that. The historical problem is that people do not want to be classified, and people do not want to be centrally organized, and people do not want to have their labor divorced from other issues of life like spirituality and art and aesthetics and things. And they don't want life reduced to the material. So if we can lay that aside, I think what we're watching, what you and I are going to work on together in this show and in future shows, is the dignity of work united with a larger global ethic, united with the deepest values that we share. And by the way, labor includes our heads. It includes the scientist in the laboratory. It includes the farmer in the field. It includes the worker in the factory. Marxism's great weakness is that he hated small shopkeepers. He hated farmers. He hated people who owned property. He saw an industrial society that was owned by the workers. The world is just more complicated than that. But I think you've gotten us off to a good start to really think about the dignity of work.
Well, you know, I'm fully aware, as you are, that in Genesis chapter 1, we read that God blessed them. He's talking about man and woman, and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living creature that moves on the ground." And it's interesting that in the history of Christian interpretation of that, those very verses, that it seems that that cultural mandate that God gives in relation to the earth in terms of labor, that has been many times interpreted as in a very rapacious way that has caused a lot of damage. And there are a lot of people who blame Christianity for an abusiveness of nature. And I'm just wondering, as you think about this sense of balance, that we're supposed to be grateful for what the earth gives us, and yet to also have limits to how we use it and work with it. Some thoughts there, Charlie.
Well, you know, one thing that I can tell you from my studies in history and anthropology is that there is no segment of humankind in any geography in any point of history that lived in some idyllic relationship with nature in some pristine, to borrow Rousseau's phrase, noble savage. That's mythology. The fact is, it's not simply Eurocentric Christianity that is rapacious. Humankind is rapacious toward one another and rapacious toward her land in a variety of contexts. And so the real problem has to do with the self-centeredness and evil that runs down the center of the human heart, to borrow a paraphrase from Solzhenitsyn. The problem has to do with the fact that we have to see a transformation both of our dispositions toward each other and toward the land, and then an intelligent stewardship or use of that. And interesting enough, the father of capitalism, Adam Smith, who is often quoted but rarely read, talks about free markets and talks about the importance of governments not over-controlling economies. But more than half of his book is devoted to the virtues and the ethics necessary for free markets to operate in a manner that will really bring benefit to all. And so the tension in every geography, in every culture, and regardless of religious tradition, whether it's Native American, whether it's Aleut, whether it is Buddhist or Hindu religiously, or Asian or African, whatever it may be, the challenge is relationships, power, and relationship to the geography, and those are universal. And the good news is that at different points in time in all of those traditions, people occasionally find ways to really find areas of peace and areas of prosperity.
Well, Charlie, I'm aware that as we're entering Christmas here, that Santa Claus represents the universal worker of both goodness and efficiency. And with that, I want to move into our first break and have our listeners think about what Santa Claus, the myth of Santa Claus, means to them, and remind them that we can learn, that they can learn more about our show by looking us up at www.ourglobalhope.com, and that they can call in at 1-888-463-6748. We'll be right back for more world-changing leadership talk.